Okay, guys. Hello. Thanks for hanging out for the second panel. Con culture and the changing face of fandom. So what does that mean specifically? So the last panel, we focused on comics. This time, we're going to talk about, once again, con culture and the changing face of fandom. So where those two things intersect are, there are many more people getting interested in what's known as geek culture, pop culture. So now they are showing up in comic stores more, toy stores more, they're on the internet more, they're at conventions more. And so they have a new perspective that may not have been highlighted as much previously, and that's coming to the forefront. It's coming to the forefront on the internet, at conventions, maybe sometimes in stores, I don't know. Definitely in what's being carried, the way retailers might be looking at what's being carried as they look on the internet and in other places, seeing how people react to it. That's what we're going to talk about tonight in this panel for an hour or more if we feel like it. So, con culture and the changing face of fandom. My name is Zeno. I've been a comics retailer for 10 years. I've been a geek for as long as I can remember. This is my 8th Dragon Con. Maybe my first convention I went to in 1986. So I've been passionate about this stuff for a long time. And now I'm going to let the panelists introduce themselves and talk a little bit about their background. And at the same time, where you think those things are currently. And then we'll take some questions.
Okay. Hi, guys. My name is Molly Diltz. I do women's studies, and I apply it to geek culture. I did my undergraduate thesis at the Penn State University on women occupying spaces in geek culture, and I run a blog called Geek Girl Gang, studying female spaces, female comics, everything like that. I'm really excited to be here, and a little bit about where we are.
Where do you think things are as in terms of the panel content?
Well, I think clearly the fandom base is changing, obviously, which is why we're talking about it. But I think we were talking about earlier about growing pains. I think there's an awareness about some of the issues, specifically gender-related issues and exclusion in geek culture with these issues. Like, we're at the point where we're aware that they exist, but we're not quite at the point yet where we're doing things about it. I mean, you guys know, like, this is a really obvious example, but, like, the Black Widow movie. I mean, how many times have we asked for this? How many times? Like, it's so clear that fans want this. I mean, it's clear. We've made it very clear. And still, these giant corporations aren't really doing anything about it, even though the awareness is there. So we're at the point where we know that changes need to be made, but we're not quite at the point where we're actually starting to make those changes.
I'm Cardi Strola. I am a PhD student at USC Annenberg in Los Angeles. My research looks at the intersection of gender studies, trauma studies, and rhetoric, which means specifically I look at sexual assault and discourses surrounding sexual assault prevention. I did my undergraduate thesis on girl gamers and gamer girls, people who self-identified as that, and how they navigated Twitter specifically. I don't really remember, though, because it was several years ago. But as far as where I see fandom now, I actually think fandom hasn't changed as much as people think it has. I think that it's just that people are talking about the fact that, like, hey, it's not just white dudes who are in fandom, and that other groups are becoming more visible, and more than that, that there's a conversation starting to happen about the media needs to change and the environments need to change, so it's not a matter of, oh, well, you're just one of the guys. There's a realization that there's a difference, and that's not to be essentialist, but it's said to say that, you know, maybe there's other things I'm interested in, or the fact that, you know, hey, this is really sexist, can we not do that? So that's how I see it.
Hi, Hi, my name is Chris Brenneman, by comparison, the least educated person at the table today. My background is in journalism. To be a beat reporter, I've contributed to comic book resources, contributed to HuffPost Live, various random blogs, podcasts. I've been coming to DragonCon for 18 years now, conventions longer than that, and I tend to agree with you. I think that fandom has always been relatively diverse, but for the first time, we're actually having to face that diversity, that for the majority of my fandom, we've liked to pretend that it's just guys that look like me. It's just a bunch of white guys that want white characters, and honestly, I think we've been very vocal about that, and that demographic's very resistant to change. And I think that... No. Yeah, but I know that. No, I think that fandom, also geek culture, has historically been one of the last bastions of culture to change. The rest of society will be making a shift, and we're still trying to hold on not to just 75-year-old characters looking the same way they did 75 years ago, but we also want the media to focus on the same looking type of fan that they've been focusing on for the last 7 decades. So there you go.
Cool. And I think that's ironic because particularly coming up in the 80s, so many of the stories were about the weirder, different person that overcame everything to, you know, become accepted or gain some type of power. And I just wanted to...
It is weird. Like, the number one comic of the 80s was the X-Men, right? I mean, Chris Claremont weaved this intricate story about outsiders, about weird people, about people that felt disenfranchised, but we kind of took that to mean that, like, oh my god, I'm a white suburban teenager. He's talking about me. We didn't want to talk about the larger demographic there. So yeah, I agree with that point.
So, any questions?
I have a question. Oh,
okay.
Well,
Ahmed?
After the last film, I don't know if I should
ask. Kick me out.
I'm a lawyer that is doing a PhD in philosophy. I'm a Muslim from Africa, from an Arab family. My mother's a feminist. I started reading comics a year ago. And I consider myself a fan. And I think that a lot of the discussion that's had about fans is a discussion in which the fan is seen as worked upon or engaged with in a way that the fan is really being manipulated, as opposed to the fan being perceived as a beacon of the untested feasibility of what the future can be, right? Like, I feel like when I sit with Kelly Sue or when I sit with Willow Wilson and we talk about what they're writing, I have a lot of input on what it could look like, right? And I don't get that sense that there is a channel or a mode for that type of two-way communication that could allow for us to be part of pushing the narrative forward. Like, I'm kind of offended by the proposition that my only relevance is to buy more shit so that they can keep producing shit that I buy. No, I actually have a lot of things to contribute, and I'm proud to kind of do that as a fan. And so I just wanted to...
Okay, on one problem, that paradigm that you addressed in the beginning is because comics, and I guess you were focusing on comics in that statement, is usually spoken of in business terms. Producers and consumers. So I guess it kind of started, the seed of it is kind of this weird thing that people were willing to take a risk on or take a chance on because of the popularity of pulp magazines, which is what feeds the initial birth of superheroes. But then at some point, probably relatively soon, it turns into like a huge money-making machine. So you figure out what's going to generate, you know, the most money from the product. On the second prong, you cited Kelly Sue DeConnick, and you also cited
the fact that there doesn't seem to be that kind of back and forth conduit of communication. But she's a prime example of someone who uses, who's been able to use social media to like engage fans and let that inform her artwork, and in turn make a lot of money for Marvel. That's my reaction to that question. I'll let the panel take it too.
I think that you're totally right. I mean, to some extent, that there feels like our feedback isn't able to be given or valued, because to some extent we do give that feedback to them. I mean, there's so many websites. I mean, you all are sure on Tumblr, and most Tumblr is complaining, and that's fine. That's good. That's what they're there for. And I mean, we are voicing, but we're not being heard because things aren't changing. So I understand your frustration there, because even if you could find a channel to show these giant corporations, I mean, think of Marvel, it's just huge. Even if you tell them what you would like to change or your opinion on that, it doesn't seem like they always listen, unless there's like extreme backlash. Like, remember that Spider-Woman cover last fall? They still released it. They put the logo on her butt and released it months later, thinking no one would notice. But so, I mean, to some extent, unless you have serious feedback, then you kind of feel heard, and then they release the cover months later. So you're right, it's very frustrating.
We got to keep in mind, too, I'm a blogger, I'm a writer, I'm active on Twitter, but the only real voice we have, and this is going to come across as cynical, the only real voice that we have as fans is our wallet. Like, how many people saw Fantastic Four this summer, the movie, right? How many people heard that it was a terrible movie? How many people saw it anyway? Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, fandom has a really bad habit of feeling obligated to buy things that they don't like. We feel obligated to support Green Lantern. We feel obligated to support Spider-Man. We feel obligated to buy the variant cover. You can't put on your dollar bill, this is a bad variant cover, I don't like it, because it still goes in the cash register, the financials still go out. The only voice that you have is your wallet. You can go on Twitter all day. I can go on Twitter all day. I can go on Tumblr. I can blog about how terrible it is, but if I'm still buying the same comics that I hate month in and month out, I'm not telling Marvel and DC that I disagree with what they're doing. I'm telling them, hey, keep doing more of this.
But see, the flip side of that argument, though, is that the dollar entitles us to push back.
Sorry. Well, I've got the same argument, though. If I withhold my dollar, that's my pushback. Like, I'm not going to buy
this. You're not a customer anyway at that point.
Well, just to put a different spin on it, for me, it's not about my relationship for the most part with the producers at all. I really don't care. It's about my relationship with the media and my relationship with the other fans. So that's my engagement with the materials. What can I take with this and do? So that's always been a really cool part of fandom for me, is like looking at this and be like, what is this saying about this? What do I see in it? Let me look at the fan fiction, let me look at the fan art, which is a different thing from the question you're asking, but I think that it gives fans that extra level of engagement. And if you think that media producers aren't looking at that, a lot of them are. Different people, the different trees, but it is a channel, especially in the age of the internet. And especially since so many content creators now were once fans themselves and still are fans themselves.
So it's like, I mean, there's this shitty media that we are really frustrated with that allows us to create that dialogue amongst ourselves. Why is this bad? Like, why are we frustrated with this? And then kind of opening that deeper conversation about the inherent issues that some of these comics have.
Can I make a comment and then ask a question?
Sure.
So on this point, I think that it is important to support the things that we think are really good, and to withhold some support from the things we think are really bad. But most of the things we like are not really good or really bad. They're complicated, right? And we love them and we hate them kind of simultaneously. And so buying the thing and pushing back against the thing is important. And we shouldn't confuse the producers of these media for, they're not money-making machines, they're human beings with ethical responsibilities and the ability to make changes. And they don't just react to what they think we want. They also create the want in us by marketing and by producing things. And then if they don't produce them, we won't want them. If they do produce them and they sell them hard, a lot of us will want them, right? So it's complicated. My question actually is on a totally different topic, which I'm about con culture that I'm really interested in, curious about. What do you think the responsibilities of conventions are to protecting both the safety and the positive experience of women and other people who sometimes get who are in dangerous or at least uncomfortable positions in conventions? Right?
You cannot have a space where you say this is where you get to come and celebrate the fact that, like, in your everyday life you're nerdy and people don't understand that, so you can come here and be accepted, if there's going to be dangers with racism and sexism and sexual assault from people. You cannot have that space to tell people that if they're going to come here and face those dangers more than, like, when it's inherent in the con culture, and it's inherent in culture broadly written. But when it's so inherent in the con culture and the campaigns that were started off about cosplay is not consent, and just so much of that stuff, it's reprehensible. I have obviously strong feelings about this.
And I think especially one of the issues it is, especially the cosplay and the issue of consent and cosplay and touching people who are dressed in costume, is because there's this culture of consumerism at conventions, so we're buying everything. I mean, we're buying this artwork of this character, we buy, like, the custom bust of the character, and then we see someone dressed as the character, and we don't see them as a person. It's almost like seeing them as another thing to consume or to be bought, because we're spending so much money, and there's that ideology in everything we do at conventions, so we see this person as something, not as a human being, but when they're dressed as a character, something to be bought or touched, and they don't have their own consent. They don't need consent. Or
in the dealer's room, there was one stall that's something like the Booth of Boobies. I'm not entirely...
Booby Trap.
I'm not sure exactly what it involved, but you had to be over 18 to go behind some curtain. So I don't know exactly. But I was walking past it, and a group of guys stopped in front of it, and they started laughing, and they were like, why would we pay for that when we're here and we can get it all for free? Which speaks to a sense of sort of entitlement to women's bodies and to this idea that they're there for their pleasure. The women are there for those guys' pleasure.
And that's, I guess, how they see female characters as well. That's how they're treating people dressed as those characters, their characters for them to consume.
Chris?
Oh, no. Yeah, that they said much more than me. No, but my contribution to that is also, though, again, coming to Dragon Con for 18 years, though, I feel like cons have not gone out of their way to dispel that notion that it's wrong to do that. I've been going to cons long enough where sometimes that behavior is even encouraged or laughed at, where that behavior is like, oh, you know, boys will be boys. Like, that's the worst expression ever, but that attitude has been fostered at conventions, and it's manifesting in very ugly ways now, and like anything, any other learned behavior, the fact that we're pushing back on it, people are taking that personally. People are taking that as an affront, as a part of their culture, when it's really just a really shitty thing to do, but we're trying to dress it up as the way we've always done things. And I think that that's part of the conversation is, well, yeah, that may have been the way we've always done things, but maybe the way we've always done things is terrible. And I think that part of that is taking accountability as fans sometimes for letting that behavior perpetrate for as long as we have.
Well, I originally had something I wanted to talk about that Spider-Woman cover, but since we moved on, something that is on this tangent now, the DragonCon Facebook page, I think, Thursday or Friday, posted something like, remember guys, I was actually trying to pull it up so I get it verbatim, but it was something along the lines of, hey, remember everybody that, you know, ask first before taking a picture, cosplay is not consent, and when I was talking with my friends, when I was looking at it, they were all like, oh, well, it's about damn time. Thanks for finally getting to this in the year of our Lord 2015. and I broke the first rule of the internet, and I read the comments.
Why did you do that? Why did
you do that? You know better.
And I'm a mess.
Why did you do that?
So it's terrible. So some J-hole decided to say something along the lines, well, if somebody needs to read the rules about photography because it's a public space, I And then I made another mistake, and I replied. I wasn't even drinking yet. So my comment was something along the lines of, well, technically, which I know that's a bad way to start things, this is not a public space, it's a private event, and therefore photographers must adhere to the rules of the private event, which are that you have to ask for permission. The problem is, I don't have my computer with me, I have my phone, and I can't turn notifications off.
Oh, man.
It's been going on constantly. So my question, where my hilarious story has led, is in tandem with the cosplay is not consent in terms of touching and that proprietorship and that sense of entitlement that you get, and my personal experience that I had 2 years ago walking up these very stairs after an event, like a late night event, minding my own business, somebody started following me and trying to take upskirt shots. And 2 years ago, I had to stop somebody in line from trying to take pictures of my legs or something, my butt, because he was doing this thing with his phone. Like, no, I'm just checking my butt. Not wearing a costume, even. So, I'm asking where the line gets drawn in terms of how far we need to ask as participants, where we ask the runners to say, this is where you need to step in. Because I can't believe that the con page, the official Dragon Con thing, has not stepped into those comments to shut these people down. And I'm sorry for the long story.
No, it's okay.
To start off, I'm going to put this in terms that everyone can understand. You don't talk about Fight Club. You don't feed gremlins after dark, and you never, ever, 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 ever.
I know.
But you're talking about that. That's like a. There's several things working there, because there's the internet space where the mention of a particular idea or concept is kind of a place marker for people on either side to attack. So you have that. And then, like you said, it's the lack of the convention stepping in, saying something, like replying to those people, shutting them down, as you said. And then the third thing is, where is the line? It's like physical space, and then the person who has a complaint, their inner comfort. Like, regardless of what the person that's making them uncomfortable is intending, like, the rule is, you go by how the affected person is feeling, and then you move forward from there. That's my rule. I mean, that should be your personal rule, your rule for an institution. I mean, your rule as a non-shitty human being. And now I'll let the panelists, you know, chime in on that.
I'm sorry,
you
can't. I'm really sorry all of that happened to you.
I mean, I can handle it. And that's part of it, is that I can handle it, but it's, maybe standing up making me more nervous. To me, it's like, I feel like the con has more responsibility to me and to a lot of other people in attendance to do more to ensure that we are.
Even if you can handle it, you should have to.
Right.
And so, there was a certain con that may or may not be DragonCon. That a few years back, there was a movement involving kind of these situations where people had put together these ribbons, like, so, you know, the con ribbons that people wear. These ones involved saying, if you come talk to me, if there's something like that going on, if somebody's sexually harassing you, if they're making racist comments, like, I am a safe person who I will come. You come talk, you see me with this ribbon, you come talk to me, and I will help you out. And that particular con supported it that first year. And then after that, they said that you are not allowed to be officially associated with us. We don't want these ribbons on our con. Because they said that they were afraid that people who would start sexually harassing people would wear the ribbon as a way to sexually harass people. So, cons are complicated because there are, you know, people issues and things. But the thing is, if you don't stand up now, when are you going to? And you're bringing all these people here, and you're telling them you have this mercy, you have this offering, and then you're literally putting them in danger, and you're providing that atmosphere. I'm not a lawyer or anything like that, but like, that's the kind of thing that people have been sued over. I have no idea. Like, do not quote me on this, please. But like, in other situations, like schools get sued for things like that. So it's just like, it's not okay. And they need to be doing more. They need to be having constant reminders of it. They need to have official rules. They need to have people around. There's so much more they can do, but at the same time, it's not just the cons problem, because it is a matter of the broader culture, the broader con culture, the broader geek culture, and all sorts of things like that. So it is a really complicated situation, but every step you can take, that you can think of to take that might help, I'm all for taking.
That's true. And also like with the comment stuff, just, I refuse to believe consent is that hard. Like, knowing when you need, like, it's not hard. You're taught it when you're 3, and you know, you don't hit your brother, you don't take a slug, you know. And so even the fact that people debate it, those people debating, they know. You know, those people pretending to take pictures of your legs know that's not okay. They know they should be, you know, they know. So, like, I don't like when people try to make consent. It's, like, necessarily even a big discussion, like, it needs to happen, but, like, it's not complicated. You know what you're doing is wrong. A big thing with, like, conventions actually taking accountability is that they're not... They don't do the same thing every single time. They're really inconsistent with how or if they even punish people. If you go to someone, a lot of times it's like too complicated to actually like hold them accountable. And if you kick someone out and they go complain that they just spent $130 on a badge and they throw a big fit, it's one you know, volunteer at DragonCon, like how much can they do? So a big issue is that we're not consistent in actually holding these people accountable. Half the time they get like, what, a reprimand because they like grab someone's breast. I mean, you know, stuff like, so that's the frustrating part of it, is that there's no actual, like, specific line of punishment that's doled out when these things, even when they're reported, which is a big issue with sexual assault in general in society.
Well, I think there's, how am I going to say this, some conventions are very well run, they're very friendly to everyone. Some conventions oftentimes come across as money grabs. They want to get as much money from you as possible. They want to get as much money from as many people as possible. And I think those conventions are the ones you find are very inconsistent with their rules. They're going to be the ones that allow ribbons this year, don't allow next year. Compound that where a lot of the people organizing the conventions, they are volunteers. These are people that have day jobs. They're working 40, 50, 60 hours a week. They're maybe talking to the other organizers maybe once a month. So there's inconsistent messaging between the people organizing the convention. I know earlier I was talking about social media. I personally think in this matter, social media right now is the most powerful tool that you have when you're going against a convention that maybe doesn't exhibit as much care and concern for your safety and well-being as possible. Because if they're going for the money grab, the worst thing for a money grab is bad press. And the quickest way to get bad press in 2015 is people just tweeting about it, going on Facebook, calling the local news, making noise about it. So again, I think a lot of it comes down to how are we going to change con culture? We're going to change con culture. I don't think that you have to have someone wearing a ribbon. I think that you should be able to go to anybody. I think that you should be willing to go and help anybody. We've all been guilty. At one point or another, even in real life or the con, of like kind of seeing something weird going on, but whatever, I'm going to go to the Pulse and get a drink. Maybe we should go over and investigate that weird thing. Maybe we should go and see what those guys are doing over there. Maybe we should go and just kind of ask the Daenerys Targaryen, are you okay? Is everything cool over here? So I think I'm really big on, if you want to see change in fandom, that the fans are going to be the one to do it. And I think that's how we're going to do it with con culture and the assholes that are ruining it for everybody.
And, you know, it doesn't just have to be something like you see a situation that's already going on and you're going to intervene in just thinking about things and thinking about what you can do to make it a part of a continuous conversation rather than just saying, oh, there's a situation that's already started, I'm going to go intervene then.
Yeah, I didn't mean to give the impression.
No, right. I didn't think you did.
Okay.
No.
Only intervene when shit's going down. Before then.
I didn't make you know.
Also, I'm glad you posted the comment, because I also always read the comments, and there's always the one person, like, yeah, I agree with that person. Like, you get all these frustrating comments, and yours is there, and I'm like, okay, at least someone gets it. So I'm glad. I know your notification's probably blowing up when you read it.
I would read more
and say, oh, at least she's got it right. You know what I mean?
You, and then Jonathan. So, the one that just spoke, yeah, you.
You can't be like, well, that's just DragonCon. You can't be like, well, that's just the convention. You can't be like, well, that was just one experience. She's absolutely right. You've got to report it, and I'm a huge advocate, again, of publicly reporting it. And by the way, I'm someone that jumps into the comments section, too. So, like, I understand rolling my sleeves up and going elbows first. So, I think you did right with that.
And just out of that, there's a comment you made in there. It said, I'm not sure this will be back where you're going with it, but I'm going to take it there. About like contacting the security, there may be a situation where you see something and you're like, that's not right, but you can't step in yourself for whatever reason. It may not be safe for you to step in, but you can go contact con security.
Absolutely.
And so there's those things that you can do too. And there may be times where it's safe for you to make a comment and be like, that wasn't okay. And there's times for you where it's not safe for you to do that. So you don't necessarily have to speak up every time. Sometimes it may not just be safe for you to do that because, like, emotionally, you just can't handle it right then. And that's okay, too.
Continuing on this whole conversation as well, I'm very new to DragonCon. Actually, this is only my third year.
This is my first year.
And I haven't attended very many other cons, just pretty much just one or two other very, very small ones. And each year that I come here, I've been continuously surprised and turned off. And particularly with DragonCon, for those of you who've been many years, do you think it's a sustaining model? Do you think it's something that is actually, the thing that most makes me think this is that the diversity panel before this, and in this panel as well, it's late at night on Sunday in a tiny room and very poorly attended, rivaling massive dance parties and an obscene amount of alcohol. I mean, do you see this as a sustaining model, or do you see this as a troublesome symptom of con culture versus DragonCon itself?
Do you mean like as of, like, if the convention could sustain itself, or do you mean like in order to create safe spaces, is it sustainable?
Um,
is is it going to get better? Is that kind of question?
Oh, no. I know that answer. I'm probably more in the sense of safety spaces, and also in terms of losing this critical eye, and losing this sort of retrospective of saying, is what we're doing okay? Is what we're doing, in the right direction? And perhaps this is because I'm new, and this is the first time I've ever even found a panel like this.
Well, I think specifically on the topic of the raves, that's something that's unique to DragonCon, them being an actual part of the convention, them being on site, and it being like sanctioned. Whereas at other conventions, the same thing may happen, but it'll be off site. It'll be like a third party person that's either collaborating or just trying to cash in on the convention action. And I guess, historically, a party atmosphere will always kind of win out over the, for better or worse. Then another thing you need to Dragon Con that there's more than one kind of con goer here. There are panel people, there are autograph people, and then there's the party people. And they come specifically for that. They know about the geek culture stuff, most of them. Some of them don't. Some of them just like Dragon Con as a party vacation experience. That's fine. It should be able to continue and sustain, but still be safe. It's not like either or, in my opinion. It shouldn't have to be either or. They can go and party and get blitzed and have lots of flashing lights and EDM and not violate people's personal space, you know. That's what I think. That's how I think. That's my response. I'll let the...
I totally get what you're saying, though. Maybe this is like practicing reckless optimism, but I'd like to think that it is improving and then this awareness is growing. I mean, like, I really think with like what the changing phase of fandom, the big thing for me, for what I'm seeing with the phase of fandom, is the definition specifically of fangirls are changing, and social justice is really cool. And it's becoming more and more of a prominent thing in fandom, is that these girls who are now growing up with these really cool websites that I didn't even have, and they're getting this awareness of feminism and of racism and of systematic things really early. They're going to grow up, and in 5 years, they're going to be starting these panels on their own. I mean, it's cool. Like, it's cool. There's backlash like there really hasn't been before from really young girls who are writing Kelly Sue or writing these authors and telling them what they think. And so maybe I'm just being optimistic, but I think that the room for this discussion of social justice-oriented discussions in geek culture is growing. Whether or not it's going to sustain or if it's just a fad, I'd like to think it's maybe an increased overall cultural awareness, again, reckless optimism, but it's definitely, I'd like to think, going to be sustainable.
Just on the matter of this panel being sparsely populated, I've been to most of the panels that I could find that were on race, gender, diversity. This is the first one I've been at where they haven't had no term people.
It's also 10 o'clock at night, right?
Well, also, we just heard that guy doing his
birthday. Really good.
Yeah,
really
good.
Yeah.
I feel like a lot of people felt the same after that. And yeah. People probably would have stayed longer had he not had that huge outburst.
Yeah, there is also a minor situation in the one right before this that might have affected that. So, people want this content. I've been told by multiple people who had been at earlier ones that they're coming back. That they, whenever they see another one, they're like, I'm coming back because I saw that there was another one and I want to hear more. And they've seeked them out where they can find them. So it's a conversation people want to have. As far as the parties and things like that, I don't have a problem personally with there being parties. I like going to parties. But as far as the parties needing to be a safe space, yes, that needs to happen. I don't go to a lot of con parties, so I can't speak to the specifics of how that might be done, but it's also important to remember that we're not going to get from A to Z between now and next con. We might get from A to B, though. So it's going to be these small incremental steps, and that's really hard to accept, but if you kind of don't think of it that way, you just get lost in this big despair of nothing's ever going to change.
Best thing, I've been coming since 1997, and I can assure you in 1997, this panel did not exist. In 1998, this panel did not exist. In 2005, this panel did not exist. I've been volunteering for 2 years now. This panel's been a regular occurrence for years now. So, yeah, like, it's changing. Like, I've been coming long enough where I can say, like, we never would have talked about this formally at 10 o'clock at night. And I know people are saying it's poorly attended, but it's 10:30 at night, and look how many people came out to have this conversation, male, female. Like, we all got together because we're concerned about it. In 97, we would not have gotten together in a space that was advertised in the Dragon Con program. There would not have been a line outside waiting for the other diversity panel to be over so that we could come in. That would not have happened. So it's changing. That change may have been glacial, but change in fandom can be glacial sometimes. So I think that the fact that you lined up for this panel, that people lined up for the last panel, that we got Kelly Sue to have the panels that she did, that she's talking about the things that she talks about, that you guys are coming for every single one. I think by 2027, DragonCon will be around. It'll still be making money, and we'll have more panels like this, and I think that we'll have more people at it, and it will be safer. It'll continue to get safer, not because DragonCon's going to make it safer, but because we're going to make it safer. We want a safer con.
I mean, and that's almost entirely thanks to CPAC, because they were the ones that like introduced the academic panels, as far as I know. But I do know that those kinds of conversations were being had by and among nerds forever. Mm-hmm. Maybe not with as sharp a focus that an academic panel would put on it, but those ideas will always have been bounced around. Yep. Like, I mean, like, I would always ask, like, okay, I look at the Blade movie, oh, why doesn't Blade have a blend-in? You know, like, that's something that me and other nerds would talk about, you know, and it's, you know,
I actually said I probably wouldn't say anything, and then I lied. So I'm going to ask a similar but tangentially related question that's kind of technical. So to what degree do you see the con space as organized around the same kind of systemic inequalities that we've been talking about for a long time, and how is that different from the way that they're expressed within the media that fans organize around? So is there a kind of one-to-one relation between the systemic inequalities within the media that the fandom organizes around, or is it a correlation between the two, or is it something entirely new? I have my own answer, but I'm asking you guys.
Can you repeat my question?
They just asked you to repeat a question. Can you?
You want to give me a
little yeah.
I cannot speak that loud anymore. So the question was, to what degree are the spaces of...
And we have gone full Donahue now. But
to what degree are the spaces that of fandom organized around the same kind of systemic inequalities that we have seen or we have been talking about in most of these panels? And are these systemic inequalities... is there a one-to-one relation between the systemic inequalities in the material that the fandom gathers around, or is it simply yet another result of society being organized around these inequalities?
I think that it's a matter of yes and no and all sorts of things like that. So it's not a matter of people going out and being purposely like, I'm going to perpetuate systemic inequalities today when I'm planning DragonCon panels. Because I don't think they're quite that evil at all. But it is a matter of, Kenneth Burke talks about when the vocabulary we use, the way we talk about things, select, deflect, and reflect reality. So even just the way, if I choose to use the word illegal alien versus like undocumented, those both give a very different view of the world. So when you're choosing what to name a panel, when you're choosing what panels go on, when you're choosing all sorts of things like that, that gives different views of the world, and oftentimes those views of the world, regardless of if you're very conscious and trying to be open and diverse or not, will end up reflecting the systemic inequalities, because that's the dominant narrative. They'll also end up reflecting your particular positionality in the world. So yes, I think they do. I don't think that that's necessarily people doing it on purpose or people being awful. It's something that people should work, everybody, not just people involved in Dragon Con, need to work to be more critically aware of. So again, to go over, we're using language, not just language using us.
I agree. Speaking of it, reflect like the media itself reflecting our diversity, you mean like as convention attendants? We're so forgiving of this media. This media is like really pretty bad. I mean, we don't have very much diversity at all. Like, Kamala was such a huge deal, and like, why was she our first Muslim superhero? Why was that a year ago? Like, what? I mean, so we're really forgiving. We love this stuff, even though it doesn't represent us very well. And so I think, I mean, definitely the conventions are more diverse than the media itself, because the media is very specifically what kind of character from this.
Yeah, and this is where I get a little cynical too. I think that the things that we love, for better or worse, they are corporate IPs. They are run by massive multinational corporations that think they know what's going to make the most money, what's going to maximize the dollar. And I think sometimes, this is not true, I think sometimes they prey on the fact that we just like comics. We want a good superhero story. And I think that sometimes they prey on that. But I also think, and I learned this from my social worker wife, I also think that, end of the day, people aren't actively trying to be bad. Like, no one's sitting there behind a desk being like, how can I screw over fandom today and minimize diversity in funny books? I don't think anybody's doing that. But at the same time, I don't think a lot of people behind the desks are being self-critical as well. I think that has the same damaging effect, unfortunately, as if they were twirling their mustache.
Yeah, it does.
Also, real talk for a second, I don't know how many of you read, like, fanfic or stuff like that, but you actually look at it, it's either just as or more racist and sexist and homophobic and all the stuff you pay for, so, like, let's not just be like, all that comic stuff and all those movies are awful, because, like, the stuff we make isn't exactly great. It can be,
yeah.
But...
And you want to think they're not twirling their mustaches, but did you guys hear what she just mentioned? Did you hear what Joss Whedon said about the criticism on Age of Ultron? He was like, you know, you call yourself a feminist once, and you always have to be feminist. It's ridiculous, and we're just like... So I kind of feel like there's a little bit of mustache twirling.
There's no mustache. I think that was more of a case, and creative types get very protective of the things they put out in the world, and I think that Joss Whedon was really... I don't think Joss Whedon's sitting in a castle in Latveria right now in his armor twirling his mustache. I think Joss Whedon said something stupid in the heat of a moment. I think that people, smart people, can say stupid things, and that sometimes...
Being putting yourself out there as a creator, you have to be open to criticism.
Sure. Yeah.
And especially when it's something coming, because there that like that quote in particular. I'm sorry, guys. Do not video. That quote in particular was talking about how women, female fans in particular, had said they were disappointed with Age of Ultron as Marvel fans and as Joss Whedon fans. And that was his response, was that I've announced myself publicly as a feminist, and now I'm always being held to these standards. And that's what he was.
You know, basic human.
Can I just crack it off? I just pretend I just went on a huge rant about all of that. Because it'll go for half an hour otherwise.
Yeah, no. Well, like, let's see that for 6 hours.
Yeah. I'm sorry. We'll have a whole other panel on Joss Whedon tomorrow. Just
Before I take more questions, what was your succinct answer to your own question? Because you said you had one.
Yeah, you're going to have to give me the. This is my succinct answer is that the systemic organization of like culture permeates through even supposedly, or even spaces that are marginalized and are supposed to support those spaces, or support marginalized identities like nerds and geeks and so on and so forth. And so some people use that as a place to reproduce the power structure that they do not have access to.
Mm-hmm.
Right? That, and it's a reproduction of the same kind of stuff you see in the comics. So their heroes are doing it, it's okay for them to do it.
Yep.
I think you've had your hand up for a long time.
Yeah.
It's just kind of a comment on what you said about the way culture. DragonCon is, this is the first DragonCon I've been to. I've been more into anime and manga, so I always went to Otakon.
Okay.
Up in Baltimore. And the rave culture exists throughout the entire nerd, just the whole sphere.
Mm-hmm.
But the difference between, I think, anime and manga, as far as Otakon went, is I feel a lot safer because they have shuttles to your hotel here. At Otakon, you're on your own. And well, you always have those problems with people who want to touch, and you have the problems with people who want to take pictures. I don't feel like there's a big difference between the two, but it's something that always have to work on. Because if you don't work on it, people slip back. And I feel like it's just more like a comment than anything else, that I feel like this con has a long way to go when it comes to that, especially because the shuttles don't run as often as they should. And you can sit there and wait for an hour for a shuttle, but at the same time, I'm grateful to have a shuttle. So that's just a comment.
For all the criticism we've done, DragonCon does a lot of things really well.
Forgive me if I'm...
This is my first DragonCon in 5 years.
Okay.
And that was my first in 15. So the difference between 1995 and 2010, I was amazed at how the gender gap had narrowed so substantially.
Mm-hmm.
But I still found DragonCon very pale 5 years ago. And I don't think I've ever been to a con, DragonCon or no, that is as diverse as what I've seen this weekend. So I don't know that fandom has changed, but the visibility of different groups within fandom has changed a great deal. And I think what we're experiencing is, first of all, there's a critical mass that has been reached so that these issues get addressed and put on the table. And a lot of people who've previously been able to ignore them can't now. And it's a lot of pushback from people who do not accept the change. And so you see things like the Gamergate that sat and ran the puppies, and a lot of things going on within geek culture at large, which is respective of the broader culture at large. So no question per se, but if you want to take that in any direction, feel free.
I think you're in the back, and then you, and then Matt.
What burlesque was, but titties. So, that's just
Go ahead.
The huge difference between us, you know, doing things to people.
I understand that it's totally different. When I think it's like, is it fostering the behavior of this thing that it's okay?
Yeah, but I think, the difference is the consent that these women are choosing, you know, to present themselves, or they're being violated by when people choose to do that to them. I really, would love to think that difference is clear. You know, that's not fostering that I can go touch this person in the hallway's boob because someone willingly presented their boobs on stage. Like, I'd really love to think that difference is clear enough that people know that it's different when you're watching a woman do a show and when you try to take a picture of her skirt. Like, so I'd love to think that, I think saying that one fosters the other is kind of making an excuse for people who do shitty things to some extent, so I struggle with that.
Well, not to make the excuse, but to say that, you know, DragonCon provides these things, where it's like, should DragonCon be providing these things if it's supposed to be making a safe haven for all fans? I mean, I'm not saying one way or the other, I'm just asking the question. You know what I mean? It's like, is DragonCon an appropriate place for those things if we then want to turn around and say people shouldn't be doing those things? It's like, I understand that there's a difference. You watch certain things at HBO in your home, doesn't mean you can get on the bus and go do those things. I understand that that's different, but we're kind of creating an environment for all of us to come together. It's the difference between, you know, someone watching HBO in their home and then going out versus saying, hey, come over to my house and watch HBO with me. You know, you see what I mean?
Well, before the panel jumps back on, I think it would be easy for the con itself to explicitly say or create an environment where if there are people that might conflate artistic works that may or may not be made for arousal, that's no judgment on those works, with the actual act of going and acting on your desires in the real world, they can, if they feel like they're those people that will be consuming that, there's a way, I don't know what it is, there's a way that distinction is clear. You can say it. I mean, you have the power. You're the one that's putting on the event. You know, you can explicitly say that, or implicitly, you can do a burlesque act about that. You know, there's a way to not have that conflation going on.
Just something, the idea that men need an outlet for their sexuality, and if they have that outlet, they're not going to sexually assault, or they're not going to rape, is bullshit. It is reinforcing rapists about men being naturally sexually aggressive, women being naturally sexually passive, which basically positions women as objects without any agency in sexual relations, and men as actors who have all the agency. So the idea that, for example, men are always going to be the ones pursuing sex. Women are always going to be the ones who will protest at first, but they really want it because that's all they can do, because they are, in effect, passive. And their passions need to be awakened. That is, like, literal quotes from sex manuals from the 20th century. But I think with the things like burlesque shows and the Playboy Bunny show I see a little bit differently than the burlesque show. If you know anything about frat culture, which it's going to be real fun talking about frat culture and saying it's like Dragon Con.
Frat nerd is a thing.
That is true. It's a,
yeah.
Tech has a basically a nerd frat. I forget what it's called, but they do. I had friends with it. It was actually really cool. But there are frats who have things like Pimps and Hoes Party, or there was another one that was even worse than that, and I'm not going to repeat it because it was really bad. The problem isn't that those have to do with sex, as it has to do with a certain cultural encoding of sex that positions men, and there are race aspects to that one as well, but like men in this position of power and women as sexual objects. And that's what those things do. So if Dragon Con is promoting those things, especially officially, that needs to stop. If it's just a burlesque show that is like engaging in like sexuality and expressions of sexuality, even if it's all women on stage, I don't necessarily have a problem with that. At
the same time, there are larger cultural messages and stuff that you cannot divorce that from. So that there are people who will go to it, there are people who will be in it, and just the idea of it will be connected to this idea that if there are women on stage, they are there for me to do whatever with, or that I can then, that's what women are for, because it's this idea of women as sexual objects. So it's a really complicated question.
A lot of times context is key, though, right?
Yeah.
That's what it comes down to. How are we promoting it?
I don't want to interrupt, but I thought it would be, it's actually pertinent to this. The upskirting happened after the burlesque. I was staying in this hotel, coming upstairs, and that's when it happened. The guy followed me from the show.
The idea?
But I
wasn't going to get upstairs. But it should be different. It should be. Like people made the point. I think as human beings, we should be mature enough to say that, you know, I enjoy things a certain way, and I should be able to disconnect that from my everyday, you know, my everyday life when I'm enjoying this, you know. It's like you said, the person is on the stage should be appreciated as an artist for the way that they choose their artistic expression. And that's what they chose. That doesn't give me the right to say that everyone who may potentially look like them in a certain way is repeating what they have chosen to say as an artist, and that also doesn't give me the right to say that my interpretation of what you were doing as your art then means that I can go and express that interpretation to you in my own way, or express that interpretation on other people who look like you in my own way.
So what Molly was saying about consent being really simple is true.
Yeah.
At the same time, if you see somebody as an object, them consenting is a non-issue. They're an object. They don't have any ability to consent because they are literally a non-person. So why would we even bother to ask? So that's not to say that that's okay, but that's the kind of way that things are seen.
So I have been coming to DragCon for 7 years. Professionally, I do marketing. I'm like one of the bad people, but not really. I do mostly work for nonprofits and strategic communications and branding. And I don't know a lot about how DragonCon is run. And I've only really talked to this because the only other con I've ever been to is AwesomeCon, which is not super awesome yet, but here's hoping. But I just wonder about, it's mostly volunteer run, and I know that there are people at the top that have been around for a really long time. I actually met James Teens today, who it was director of guests for like 19 years. And I just wonder, you know, have they ever done an exercise where they express their values and how they embody those values in their programming and how they handle the way that they run their convention, and how you would turn that into strategic communications with your Facebook page when things start to devolve and allowing that to become an unsafe place. You know, we all come because we want to enjoy fandom, and everybody in their everyday life, regardless, wants to be safe. And I just, it's a really straightforward question because I don't know. I did a little Google a minute ago to say DragonCon values, and absolutely nothing came up. But that doesn't mean that it doesn't exist. There's a lot of work put into making this different every year, and I know they must talk about communications.
Yeah.
But I just don't know that they've really talked about brand is super important. It is who you are as a company or an organization or whatever. It is everything that people associate with you as an organization, regardless of whether or not you intend it. And I think that it should be something that is discussed in some way. Values are super important. are run by volunteers and you don't know, and those volunteers don't know what you stand for, except that we're going to get all these people together because they really like this stuff, then you will end up with the kinds of things that we're talking about, unsafe places and people being objectified, et cetera, et cetera. I can't imagine that their values would be like to objectify people.
Right.
So, you know.
And it's been done well before. Are you guys familiar with Emerald City Comic Con in Seattle? They have actually about 53% of their attendees identify as female, and I'm not sure if that has to do with it, but they are very, like, it's very clear what their values are. The cosplay or not consent posters are all over the convention. It's like announced on the announcements. I mean, they make sure that that is right there in the front. Like, and so they do it really well. So it is possible for that to be a part of your branding because it's been proven with Emerald City. So that kind of makes you question if it was a conscious choice to not do the same at other conventions.
Well, I don't know about within the organizing hierarchy, like higher up, if that conversation has been had or if there's some kind of core value statement or mission statement that addresses where they stand on those issues. I do know that like on the DragonCon TV, there's one of the segments that's kind of like a bullet list that addresses like the cosplay is not consent,
right.
All of that. It was like a 5-item thing, and they concentrated on it. It was not just like a quick thing, but that may have been just something the DragonCon TV people wanted to do. I don't.
Yeah, I mean the difference being that bullet points on a screen that gets thrown up, or you know like. Make sure that if you're able-bodied and you can walk up the stairs,
right.
That
yeah,
let people that cannot walk up the stairs use the elevators or whatever. That's strategic communications, but embodying your values is something totally
right.
Different.
You're
and
right.
Values are not just cosplay is not piece set. It's everything. It's you know,
yeah,
why
yeah.
We're here and celebrating why we're here.
I just don't know that any of us have the level of experience with the con to be able to answer that question.
Well, and the con's also very, to your point, it's very schizophrenic. I mean, every track is kind of their own entity. We plan our own events. We kind of have the rules.
Mm-hmm.
Every track director reports to a higher person. They can yay or nay it. But to his point, like, doesn't really interact with anybody much higher than that. As far as I do soulless marketing as my day job too, so I feel you. I get the impression that
I'm not soulless. I work for nonprofit.
No, you're not soulless. I am multinational corporation. No, but I get the impression that their brand is the largest pop culture convention in the Southeast, and let's see how high we can get those numbers next year. As a consumer, and a marketing guy, that's what I get the impression that they're interested in their brand being first and foremost.
They're like the red-headed stepchild of Comic-Con. Like they are constantly up against them. Like we got more blood this year. We're better.
That's a whole separate panel.
Yeah.
The DragonCon Comic-Con panel is. I think you've had your hand up for a while, and then I'll jump back over here.
So, I've been going to this con specifically for 11 years, and I feel like things have gotten substantially better. I feel like you're seeing things now, like the panelists have said, like about this panel specifically, and things like Ms. Marvel being a thing, things like Steven Universe being a thing, where we're getting all kinds of representation in that show, and I want to make sure, you know, that's not just my work white guy perspective of things getting better. Is they are getting better.
I'm white guy perspective.
Yeah, I mean, we're all white, so we have to be honest about that stuff.
I wouldn't be here if there wasn't a Ms. Marvel, straight up. I would not be here.
So that shows you that something is good. I mean, I think increased awareness has led to change. However, we could be doing another 30 years of comics and no white guys and still not have equal representation. So if you think about it, like, it's nice to have, like, it's definitely not something to scoff at that we have more representation now at all. But
it's getting better and worse because a lot of people wouldn't be here if there weren't things drawing them here. But there's also a pushback from people who don't welcome change and appreciate it.
There's a lot of people on that.
Yeah.
I just want to answer his question. Robin and I have been coming to the con for 5 years. We're from North Carolina. We discovered DragonCon because somebody said, hey, let's go to Atlanta DragonCon. What's DragonCon? We're a whole bunch of people here together. I'm in technology, so I had never heard of this con. We rented a car, we got here, we drove straight. We were blissed. So, from that time to this time, are things getting better? Yes. Am I looking at it from a black woman's perspective? Yes. For me, I love to read books, I love comics, I love everything, movies. Everything about this con offers as far as fans. And I'm all over the place with it. I'm just as splintered as everybody else. But one thing that I was lacking is, where are black artists and where are black authors? This con offered that to me. We discovered the state of black science fiction. Those authors, you know, they're not mainstream. So we have to go and seek them out, find their work, find them on social media, and then promote them to our friends, because they need to pay their bills as well, and their dream is to be writers and comic book authors. You saw Afua, but there's more than her.
Mm-hmm.
But you have to promote them. You have to say, if they have good content, you have to buy their material and stop looking for a hookup. You know, buy their material. Because then they can be a full-time artist and a full-time author, get discovered, be more diversified in our marketplace. So has it gotten better? Slowly, yes. Will it get better? If we keep coming to the con, keep promoting the artists, keep supporting them,
ourselves and look in the mirror and say, okay, what can I change today?
Again, just a fucking thing.
I've never heard of her before. I'd like to add my perspective is a little different from everybody in the crowd to answer your question. I do like DragonCon. I've been going for 5 years, and every year I've been going by myself. And that's something to consider, too, because, you know, the usual, one of the important comments is be in a group, bring a buddy, especially late at night, after 2, 3 a.m. out here. You know, it's not safe in the streets, no matter how much security is out. It's not 100%. And I've been very lucky in that, knock on wood, you know, nothing has happened to me that I'm going to need to psychologically, emotionally recover from later. And it's, I think, compared to a couple of other cons I've attended, and those have been actually other cons that I like from book. I feel like DragonCon is safer because, especially at anime cons, I don't cosplay for a very specific reason. Because I'm a little Asian girl, and I am fulfilling certain stereotypes, and way too many creepy connotations and associations and hate, fetish, weird shit that I am not touching. And here, I feel like I can, if I want to cosplay something, or I'm wearing something skimpy, or even just dress like this, it's the chances of it being taken as an invitation are less.
Thank you. Yeah, thanks,
yeah.
You guys.
It sucks. No, I'm just kidding. Did anyone else want to comment on that? Okay, and I think Matt, and then I'm going to move back over there.
This is loosely related to this last point. So, we've all been admitting this. I've been coming to DragonCon for 15 years now. As a young man, fan, and then academic, and a volunteer organizer. And I've noticed a new thing in the last 3+ years, which is not obviously so positive. I'm going to say this in a really judgy way, but I'm more ambivalent about it. What the Marriott is going to be like in 2 hours, right, tonight, it's kind of scary, right? DragonCon has always had wild, you know, late night is wild at DragonCon. the last few years, it's really gotten pretty out of hand. In particular locations, late at night, just when, you know, just before the bars are going to shut down, right, or the drink stands are going to shut down. This is a major part of DragonCon culture now, right?
Yeah.
What do we think about it? What do we have to do about it? Right? How do we react? I mean, I'm you know, move through that area late at night. I'll move it through it late at night because I'll go to something and then I'll want to get somewhere else and I'll be there even if I don't want to be in that scene. And I'm the like least in danger person in this, of many of the people in this room in terms of some of the things that go on there. So, and I find it scary. So, what do we need to think about it?
This isn't an answer, but this is our first DragonCon, and I usually, when we go to New York, we go to smaller ones, and that's like a huge thing. I've just noticed, just as a first timer, this party culture, this alcohol, how it's flowing is unique in a way to DragonCon, and it's been a little bit startling as a first time goer. I mean, fun, but startling a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, it's never been something I've been into. The two conventions I go to every year are, they go to this, I'm involved with it, and I go to HeroesCon in Charlotte, which brands itself as family-friendly show, so it's night and day for me for those two conventions. And yeah, I've been going 18 years, and it's something that it gets icky, it gets uncomfortable. I think that, I don't know that DragonCon's interested in doing it because, it's a revenue stream, right? I mean, people, that's a big draw for it. A lot of those 65,000 people, a big showing of them come because that's one hell of a party happening over there. So, yeah, I don't have an answer to that. I'm so sorry.
And it's not only, like, the con goers that are in that mix, it's creatives.
Like a lot of the creatives come for that. They know that they're going to have a hell of a party Friday, Saturday, Sunday.
I mean, before I answer this, is anybody recording? It's totally cool if you are. I just want to know so I know exactly how to phrase this.
He is.
Okay, I just wanted to check. I've been to other conferences that are not like DragonCon, and they're very focused on very different things than fandom. So it wouldn't be the kind of thing that you would expect there to be those wild parties at. They have those wild parties. It's not a DragonCon thing in and of itself. So I think that, yeah, it has gotten worse maybe in the past few years, but also DragonCon in just even the past 3 or 4 years, I think, has expanded a lot. Like, I only started coming, but not that long ago. It was within the past 10 years that I started coming, probably closer to 5 than 10.
7 years ago it was 35.
Yeah. And now it's at what, 65? So I mean, that's just a huge growth. And I think the con overall is had to deal with that very rapid growth, and it's hard to do. And I think that's part of it, is that's been, always been like that party spot. Even just like fitting that many bodies there is impossible. So I think that's part of it. And just the fact that you get that many people and people talk it up, they're like, DragonCon has these awesome parties. So it's gotten this like expectation.
And the problem is with the alcohol itself, it's what the alcohol causes.
People use
to excuse certain behavior or think that they can act a certain way because that's prominent.
Yeah.
That's the issue.
It is 11:30, so I'm gonna have to. This is gonna have to be the last question, unfortunately. I just want to make sure that we've finished with that question before I take one more. And yeah.
I just think it's wonderful. This is my third DragonCon, and I would never have expected a session like this. And with all the diversity in this room, and I'm in marketing for a nonprofit, I work for Evil Empire. And DragonCon's not an evil empire, but it is quite decentralized and dedicated friendly, tendencies. I think if we all, make an idea, we send
comments, decisions, conditions, to contact the track directors. Some of them are better at this kind of thing than others, but to try to keep it in a positive way so that the comment doesn't go straight to the track, because in my day job as an evil person, be evil, you know. But, you know, the people who are ragging on them and just saying negative stuff, they go, oh, yeah, don't want to deal with that. But if it's coming from a more positive place, it's got little suggestions as to how things can change just a little tiny bit, it can happen, because I've been able to do that just a little tiny bit in my job. It's taken years and years and years, but it's better than it was. And this is just great. This is like the best session I've been to, and I wish I could just stay here for like ever.
Awesome. Well,
love you too.
Just because a lot of people have said, like, I work for the evil empire. Maybe you do, but you can also, like, always be, like, a secret spy double agent. So, really, you're working for the Rebel Alliance. Yes. Also, a really good tip to get you through family holidays.
All right, well.
Stupid mother-in-laws can get my property.
Thanks to the panel. Thanks for you guys.